As I wrote this commentary, I was thinking about how indifference among conservatives is propelling the descent into socialism for our country. Sadly, many conservatives grow weary of the fight against the Democrat Party and socialism. They wonder if they should stop getting involved, stop listening for the truth in a world where truth has lost much of its value. I was reminded of that when one of the listeners who gets my weekly commentary in their email suggested that maybe it was futile to argue with a liberal. I disagree. We must oppose their radical ideas and never give an inch. If you and I go silent on the playing field, it's left wide open for those who will never stop their relentless pursuit of socialism. We must never give up. And I intend to oppose them as long as God gives me the strength and the wisdom to do so. I implore each of you to not become complacent and think that your vote and your voice don't matter. They do. More than anything else, I detest hypocrisy. It has always bothered me that lawyers and politicians can claw at one another one minute and laugh and share booze with one another the next. This isn't a game that we're playing. This is life. I thought of that when a few Republicans were talking about what a nice, amiable guy Democrat Elijah Cummings was when not engaged in politics. But isn't that like saying that Lizzie Borden was a sweet girl when not chopping her parents up with an axe? The country woke up on Thursday the 17th to hear of the death of the Maryland Democrat. He was 68 years old and had long been a strident voice in Congress. Predictably, we heard the call that no one should speak negatively of the dead. How is that not hypocrisy? If you spoke negatively of Cummings while he was alive, why would you suddenly speak positively of him in death? Let me hasten to say that I do not wish death on any human being, and that includes Elijah Cummings. I will pray for his soul and for his family. But I will not be hypocritical and pretend that Cummings was someone to be looked up to. While I salute his courage during the civil rights movement, it did not bleed over into his political life, where he became a bully and totally dishonest. His early death at just 68 reminds us all that making temporary gains here on earth are just that, temporary. Cummings used his time as a highly partisan Democrat politician who would stop at nothing in the quest for power. He wielded great influence on Capitol Hill, but eventually, each of us must face our Maker and our judgment. As of the 17th, Elijah Cummings had zero influence. He stands alone before God to answer for his devious methods while in Congress. It was Cummings who had the largest hand in working with Lois Lerner in the IRS to pursue conservatives through that agency. He dealt underhandedly with Nancy Pelosi on a host of issues and was one of the most strident pursuers of impeachment against President Trump. As of the 16th of October, it is not our judgment that matters for Elijah Cummings. That judgment belongs to God alone. As I turn now to the subject of Turkey and Syria, I credit the Canada Free Press and Sumantra Mitra of the Federalist for their research and comments that I blend today with my own. Donald Trump did not betray the Kurds. Our soldiers were not there to protect the Kurds. They were there on a mission that had long ago expired. As for Syria, it is impossible to know what the future holds for the Kurds, the Turks, the Iranians, Assad, or anyone else in the Middle East. The near consensus view of President Trump's decision to remove U.S. special forces from the Syrian border with Turkey was that Trump was enabling a Turkish invasion and double-crossing the Syrian Kurds, who had fought with the Americans for 5 long years against ISIS. Trump gave one of the dishonest so-called journalists at ABC News, Jonathan Karl, an opportunity to ask a question while the president was meeting with the leader of Italy. And Karl actually said that Trump had given the green light for Turkey to invade Syria. He didn't ask if the president had done that. He asserted it as fact before Trump corrected him. Jonathan Karl, of course, makes no secret of his dislike for Donald Trump, and I'm sure the feeling is mutual. But Jonathan Karl's dislike of the president has no place in a newscast where fairness and truth are expected. That kind of reporting seeks to skew the American public's confidence in their president. Trump's move, the liberal thinking goes, harms U.S. credibility and undermines U.S. power in the region and throughout the world. But there are several problems with that narrative. Obama decided to work with the Kurdish YPG militia in Syria because it was the only significant armed force outside the Iranian axis that enjoyed congenial relations with both Assad and Iran. Obama deployed around 1,000 troops to Syria. Their limited numbers and radically constrained mandate made it impossible for the Americans to have a major impact on events in that country. They weren't allowed to fight against Assad or Iran. Our troops were tasked solely with fighting ISIS. Obama instituted draconian rules of engagement that made achieving even that limited goal all but impossible. During his tenure as Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton hoped to revise the U.S. mandate to enable U.S. forces to be used against Iran in Syria. Trump rejected Bolton's plan because it was a recipe for widening U.S. involvement in Syria far beyond what the American public and Trump himself was willing to countenance. In other words, the claim that the United States had major influence in Syria is wrong. It does not have such influence and is unwilling to pay the price of developing such influence. And that brings me to the second flaw in the narrative about Trump's removal of U.S. forces from the Syrian border with Turkey. The underlying assumption of the criticism is that America had an interest in confronting Turkey to protect the Kurds. This misconception, like the misconception regarding U.S. power and influence in Syria, is born of a misunderstanding of Obama's Middle East policies. Aside from ISIS's direct victims, the major casualty of Obama's deliberately feckless anti-ISIS campaign was the U.S. alliance with Turkey. Whereas the United States decided to work with the Kurds because they were supportive of Assad and Iran, the Turks view the Syrian Kurdish YPG as a sister militia to the Turkish PKK. The Marxist PKK of Turkey has been fighting a guerrilla war against Turkey for decades. The State Department designates the PKK as a terrorist organization responsible for the deaths of thousands of Turkish nationals. Not surprisingly, then, the Turks viewed the U.S.-Kurdish collaboration against ISIS as an anti-Turkish campaign. Throughout the years of U.S.-Kurdish cooperation, many have made the case that the Kurds are a better ally to the United States than Turkey is. That case is compelling because the Kurds have fought well. Under Erdogan, Turkey has stood against the United States and its interests far more often than it has stood with us. Across a spectrum of issues, from Israel to human rights, Hamas and ISIS to Turkish aggression against Syria, Greece and Israel in the Eastern Mediterranean, to upholding U.S. sanctions against Iran and beyond, for nearly 20 years, Erdogan's Turkey has distinguished itself as a strategic threat to America's core interests and policies and those of its closest allies in the Middle East. Despite the compelling, ever-growing evidence of the time that we have spent there, the time has come to reassess U.S.-Turkish ties. The Pentagon refuses to engage that issue. The Pentagon, in fact, has rejected the suggestion that the U.S. remove its nuclear weapons from Incirlik Air Base in Turkey, or diminish Incirlik's centrality to U.S. operations in Central Asia and the Middle East. The same is true of U.S. dependence on Turkish naval bases. Given the Pentagon's position, there is no chance that the United States would consider an armed conflict with Turkey on behalf of the Kurds. The Kurds are a tragic people. They live as persecuted minorities in Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Iran, and have been denied the right of self-determination for the past 100 years. But then Kurds have squandered every opportunity they have had to assert independence. The closest they came to achieving self-determination was in Iraq in 2017. In Iraqi Kurdistan, the Kurds have governed themselves effectively since 1992. In 2017, they overwhelmingly passed a referendum calling for Iraqi Kurdistan to secede from Iraq and form its own independent state. Instead of joining forces to achieve their long-held dream, the Kurdish leaders in Iraq went against one another. One faction, in alliance with Iran, blocked implementation of the referendum and then did nothing as Kurdish-controlled Kirkuk was overrun by Iraqi government forces. The Kurds in Iraq are far more capable of defending themselves than the Kurds of Syria. Taking on the defense of Syria's Kurds would commit the United States to an open-ended presence in Syria and justify Turkish antagonism. America's interests would not be advanced, they would be harmed, particularly in light of the YPG's selling trait for Obama, its warm ties to Assad, and Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps. The hard truth is that 50 U.S. soldiers along the Syrian-Turkish border were just a fake trip wire. Neither Trump nor the U.S. military ever had any intention of sacrificing U.S. forces to either block a Turkish invasion of Syria or foment deeper U.S. involvement in the event of a Turkish invasion. Apparently, in the course of his phone call with Trump, Erdogan called Trump's bluff. Trump's announcement following the call made clear that the United States would not sacrifice its soldiers to stop Erdogan's planned invasion of the border zone. But Trump also made it clear that the United States would not support the Turkish move. In subsequent statements, Trump repeatedly pledged to destroy the Turkish economy if Turkey committed atrocities against the Kurds. If the Pentagon could now be brought on board, Trump's threats can easily be used as a means to formally diminish the long, hollow U.S. alliance with Turkey. It's critical to note, because the media won't do it for you, that Trump did not remove U.S. forces from Syria. They are still deployed along the border between Jordan, Iraq, and Syria to block Iran from moving forces and material to Syria and Lebanon. They are blocking Russian and Syrian forces from taking over the oil fields along the southern bank of the Euphrates. Aside from defeating ISIS, these missions are the principal strategic achievements of the U.S. forces in Syria. For now, they are being maintained. Will Turkey's invasion enable ISIS to reassert itself in Syria and beyond? Perhaps. But here too, as Trump has made clear, it is not America's job to serve as the permanent jailer of ISIS. European forces are just as capable of serving as guards as Americans are. America's role is not and should not be to stay in Syria forever. Our goal was to beat down threats to the United States and world security as they emerge, and then let others, Turks, Kurds, Europeans, Russians, UN peacekeepers, maintain the new, safer status quo. The final assumption of the narrative regarding Trump's moves in Syria is that by moving its forces away from the border ahead of the Turkish invasion, Trump somehow harmed regional stability and America's reputation as a trustworthy ally. On the latter issue, Trump has spent the better part of his term in office rebuilding America's credibility as an ally after Obama effectively abandoned the Sunnis and Israel in favor of Iran. To the extent that Trump has harmed U.S. credibility, he didn't do it in Syria by rejecting war with Turkey. He did it last month by failing to retaliate against Iran's brazen military attack on Saudi oil installations and maintaining the safety of maritime routes in and around the Persian Gulf. The best move that Donald Trump can make now, in light of the fake narrative of his treachery towards the Kurds, is to finally retaliate against Iran. A well-conceived and limited U.S. strike against Iranian missile and drone installations would restore America's posture as the dominant power in the Persian Gulf and prevent further destabilization of the Saudi regime and the backsliding of the UAE towards Iran. As for Syria, it's impossible to know what the future holds for the Kurds, the Turks, the Iranians, Assad, or anyone else. But what is clear is enough that Trump avoided war with Turkey, and he began extracting America from an open-ended commitment to the Kurds that it had never made and never intended to fulfill. If the feckless Barack Hussein Obama had taken the same action that Trump took in Syria, Democrats would be shredding confetti and slapping him on the back. The Kurds have been fighting the Turks for centuries, and the modern Kurdish forces, who are mostly followers of heavy left-wing Stalinist ideology, were only our allies due to the convergence of interests. Our American troops were positioned in the Middle East due to the simple reason that an Islamic sect had metastasized and formed a statelet. But that threat of ISIS as a state is over. ISIS is still there, but not as a state. While the Kurds were allies during the war against the Islamic State, they were also benefiting from generous American aid, weapons, and air cover. If the U.S. Congress wishes us to continue a new mission of protecting the Kurds, let them authorize it. We are more than $20 trillion in debt. U.S. wars and military action in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Pakistan have cost American taxpayers more than $6 trillion just since 2001. That total, my friends, is almost $2 trillion more than all federal government spending during the recently completed 2017-2018 fiscal year. We cannot continue to engage ourselves in wars in the Middle East between parties who have been at war for more than 1,000 years and have no intention of stopping those wars. I'll close today with a statement that's circulating on the internet that I believe spells out the wisdom of Donald Trump on this issue. By pulling our troops out of Syria, Turkey invaded Syria and assaulted the Kurds. Russians sent an envoy to Syria to make a deal between the Kurds and the Syrian government, uniting them against their common enemy, Turkey. The Iranians were not happy that the Turks invaded Syria either, and so they brought their troops to the border of Turkey. Moreover, Germany is now hitting Turkey with sanctions because of its attack against the Kurds of Syria. Do you not see what a chess player Donald Trump really is? As long as the United States was there, those forces were united against us. Trump's decision to withdraw our troops has now pitted these former allies against each other, and it didn't cost us anything. Formerly, Turkey, Iran, Russia, and Syria were united against the United States. The Europeans were not involved and were enjoying U.S. protection of their interests, but now they've got to fight for their own interests. This is good for Israel, too, because Iran has to defend Syria against Turkey instead of focusing on harming Israel. The three main enemies of Israel, Iran, Turkey, and Syria, are now facing off against each other. This invasion is going to cost Turkey dearly. It brought unity between Syria and the Kurds, and division between Russia, Turkey, and Iran. This is not just unbelievable what the president is doing. Just sit back and watch the three Muslim nations clobber away at each other. I thank you for listening today to this bonus commentary. I hope you'll join me each week for my commentaries. And I'll be back this weekend, God willing, with another commentary. Thank you for listening.